the gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sticking me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, yo.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hello, witches, and welcome to That Witch Life Podcast. I'm Hillary, I'm your host today. I'm joined by Kanani.
Yay!
And Courtney.
Laurier!
And we're excited to have you on the episode. Later on the episode, we have an amazing guest, Benabel Wen, coming to talk about...
We have Benabel Wen.
Yeah,
she's coming on the podcast.
Yeah. I know. She's amazing. We're really excited to talk about her book, Holistic Tarot,
and
an integrative approach to... Shut up, I'm talking.
Oh, sorry.
An integrative approach to using tarot for personal growth. Her amazing website, her YouTube series. We're excited to talk with her later.
Yes.
What has everybody been up to? Oh, wait, I forgot a guest. We have a guest.
By popular demand.
Our mascot.
The Screaming Goat is back.
The Screaming Goat has returned. Because we know Kanani is going to fangirl and the Screaming Goat can come out and get her to stop and stop making guests uncomfortable.
It doesn't make me stop.
So yeah, sorry. What has everyone been up to?
So two things. I've been very good lately about establishing my new moon cleansing practices, and I'm trying to be more diligent about my full moon charging practices.
I'm really bad about that. I'll be like, wait a minute, was it a full moon? I'm like, God damn it.
I know.
I'm really bad.
It is. It's not that you have to... have to do it, but it's also...
But it's a nice way to recharge, especially, I have so many stones and crystals, like, it's a really great way for me to recharge those, for me to recharge myself, you know?
And I think people have to remember, yes, there are a lot of people who are born with magical ability, and so we say they are natural born witches or something like that, but I think we also have to remember that witchcraft is a craft for a reason. You have to practice.
Yes.
You have to work on it,
you know? Have to work on
it. But I'm going to go ahead and jump in here because I promised people I'd be making a big announcement on today's episode of That Witch Life. So,
do you have a big announcement today?
Yes.
Just kidding.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Everybody already knows that you
are an
asshole.
Oh, you really believed me.
This is
not
an announcement.
Courtney's leaving her husband for the Screaming Goat. Big announcement.
Amazing.
Sorry. More like you would throw me out and throw me to the Screaming Goat.
Yeah, that's true.
That was more
He'd be like, you need to live in the back with the Screaming Goat.
And he threatens that all the time when I'm driving crazy. Yeah, you're going to go live with the Screaming Goat. Anyway, so in 2021, my fourth book is coming out. And it is called Hecate, Goddess of the Witches. So
it's gonna be so good.
Yes. So it's a departure from what I've normally done because a lot of my work in the past has been with tarot, as you all know, but also writing about Celtic and Irish specifically goddesses. So now I'm talking about an ancient Greek goddess, which is very different than my normal area of research. But the more I'm getting into it, the more I realize how much my journey has had Hecate in it this entire time. And so this book is about, you know, all my books are about finding an accessible path to working with these deities and including these deities in your life.
Yep.
And so, but it always includes history and includes as much mythology as I can. There aren't a lot of myths about Hecate, except for the one where she helps Demeter find Persephone. Because she was, this is why, Kanani, you're going to love this. I mean, if you haven't spent much time with this goddess, you're going to love her.
Well, she was our goddess for Sunfest this last summer.
She was, but she also, what we probably don't know about her, is that she told the Olympian gods that she just didn't feel like hanging out with them because they were all loud and bawdy, and so she went and lived in her cave alone, and so when
Persephone... I love her!
I know!
Smart goddess!
I knew I loved her,
right?
Wow!
I know, and then when Demeter couldn't find Persephone, Hecate was the one who heard Persephone scream and was like, I think I know where your daughter went. I can't prove it, but I think she ran off with that Hades boy. And so Demeter and Hecate marched up to the sun together and stood in front of the sun and wouldn't let him move across the sky until he could fess up to what he had seen that day and that he could confess what he knew where Demeter was. So she was totally into roadblocking, helping a sister out, and
Going back to her cave by herself. That's me. That's exactly what I would do. I'd be like, fine, let me help you. I've helped you. I'm going back to my cave.
Yeah. Life changed. Right? Now you know.
Right?
Yeah. So that's exciting. It's scary. Every time I start writing a new book, it's always a very vulnerable experience. I think I'm probably not the right person to write this. There's probably somebody else. But I just keep coming back to, I always envision one person who I'm writing for. And I just keep saying, if only one person reads this book, what is it that they want to know? So in my mind, I'm imagining the one young woman that I feel it would benefit most from this book or would most appreciate this book, and just kind of sit with her in my mind and we'll see how it goes. But it's been a lot of research and I'm loving it.
What everyone Excellent. Wants to know is do you have Kanani's free signed copy? That's what our listeners...
You're not going to read it anyway.
That's not what I said.
Literally,
I said,
why would she give you a book?
My free copy signed.
Time out. Have you read any of her books?
No.
Right.
We talked about this with Awen.
We talked about this before. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. All our listeners will know that what I just... You need to sign my book and give it to me. And then I'll take pictures with it and I'll make everyone buy it. That's what I do.
But you know, it's better if you can say, when I read this book, it was really good.
It used to be she just didn't read the books. Now she's doing it because she thinks it's funny.
We're going
to
like glue your eyes open and project the book in front of you.
I used to think that you just didn't like to read, but since we've been doing this podcast, you've been reading.
I have started reading more.
So much, and you read fast.
But not this bitch's books.
No! She won't read my books! And I'm like, what am I even dedicated to?
I know, that was
ass.
A good one.
Jesus.
I really like that
I'm
one.
Dedicating
I didn't
all
read
of
it, but I like
it. I'm dedicating them all to
Hillary.
I mean, out of spite. If you must, I guess that would be okay with me.
Yeah.
Well, now you have to dedicate this one to me because it's about me, clearly, because
I'm actually never dedicating anything to you again.
That's not true.
No.
I'm fabulous.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's what's been that's what's been going on with me. When I'm not here, I am hanging out with an ancient Greek goddess. So there.
Mm-hmm. And your dog.
And my dog. He's very cute.
He is very cute. Ichabod is so cute.
He is the cutest dog.
He's
for
so cute. Riley's really cute, too.
Yeah.
It was Riley's birthday her birthday was on Thursday. So she got a crown. I have pictures. I should share it on our podcast. Yeah. I mean, on our podcast Instagram.
Our Instagram, yeah.
But she had a little birthday crown. She went to the pet store and they showered her with treats, which then turned into a car fart factory later in the day for me. I was like, happy birthday to me.
Oh, dog
great.
Farts are the worst.
Oh, it was lethal. I was like, I wonder if the people outside of the car can smell this too.
Ichabod has these noisy tubes.
Oh, they like clear. Does he like look at his butt all startled?
I'm looking kazoos up there. It does. My dog.
Our poor listeners are like, are you really? Is this really what this is about?
I wonder if our listeners can like have sensed and picked up that like I am not a dog person. You two are totally dog people, and I am a cat person. So when you guys talk about dog farts, I'm like completely lost because that is just horrific to me. Because I just...
Dude, cats fart also.
It makes me want to cuddle my cats. That's what it makes me do. Like, thank you.
I tried to cuddle your cats. They don't cuddle.
No. One of them does. One of the two does. Kimmy, who's passed, she was a cunt on wheels. She wouldn't want to cuddle anybody or anything.
On wheels.
She was horrific. She used to hunt my children. Literally.
When they were, like, infants.
Stalk them like prey. Like, she would hunt them. And she got the business a couple times for doing that, so she wouldn't even be in the same room with them. I'm trying to think of, like, things magically related that I've done this summer. And I haven't done too much specifically new magically, other than I've really made a conscious effort to be outside as much as possible and enjoy the nice weather as much as possible. But one thing that has happened, and it happened twice, and I'm trying to remember the second time, which makes me feel like a total asshole, but this is a really funny thing. My kids love the Disney Channel. We're obsessed with Disney. And for those of you who may have kids or maybe you watch the Disney Channel, there was an actor who was, I believe, 20 who died.
Yes. Oh.
And he was the star of one of all, so my daughter loves the movie Descendants. He was a star in the movie Descendants. The third one, so sad, released like the week after he died. And he was the star of like three little sitcoms, one of the stars of three little sitcoms that they used to love to watch. So I had to explain to them that this character had passed and they're not going to see him anymore. And he's going to have to be written off of these shows. And, so of course they thought that was really, really sad. And, we lit a candle and we did a little prayer and we lit a little white candle to help with, you know, healing for people who loved him and for his family and to wish them the best. And we talked, you know, just sending healing energy. And we did a little kind of memorial, which I thought was really, and I didn't know how much they would get and, you know, understand from it, even though I thought it was important we did it. And then later, and I'm trying to remember, I think one of their friends, like grandma's died or something. I can't quite remember what, who it was. Cause it was someone kind of disassociated from us, but someone that someone we cared about knew. And the first thing they said was, we should light a candle.
Oh,
and I was like, and that made me so happy. That's, I was so like, sweet. Ah, it's
they're like, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, yes, yes, we should light a candle. And so,
that's so cute.
We did the same thing. Your we went over to so my cute. Altar and we lit a candle and we each held it and we each, you know, said a blessing that we wanted to specifically give to, you know, help that person find the light, but mostly to help heal the people that are left behind when someone passes. And so that was really exciting for me that when it happened again, they're like, oh,
we got to do this.
Time
yeah.
to go light a candle. That's really time sweet. To, you know, help them move on. So that was really exciting. And we've spent a lot of time outdoors this summer, which has been incredible because I feel like I just don't do that enough. And I've made a very concerted effort to, if I can be outside, let's be outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's been really nice that way.
Awesome. What have I been up to? I visited the Bay Area for a friend's bachelor party, so that was fun.
Nice.
I got to see I still have some students down there, so I got to see my students, which was nice. And what have I been doing? Working like a maniac, but good. Just been like kind of...
Taking care of your poor dog.
Taking care of the poor dog who is, you know, finally on the... At least the other side of the hill of recovery. We got... This is a three-year-old dog that can't run for...
Three-year-old Catahoula mix
that can't run for 16 weeks. So we're 6 weeks in. We have about 8 to 10 left. And we're going swimming today, which is really exciting. She's cleared to do some swim rehab. So that'll be fun. And yeah, I've been trying to like... take care of my garden that is not loving this like all over the place weather.
Strange,
my plants are so
weather.
Pissed. They're like, I have all these herbs and I was like, I had some really nice herbs growing, some of which just didn't survive the fluctuation. But yeah, trying to expand the herb garden. What else have I been doing? Reading in the, like basically, oh, I got a hot tub. So I sit in the hot tub and read. That's like basically the only
Why
time
are we
time.
Not recording from the hot tub is what I want to know.
I mean, I told Courtney that there was a hot tub and that you guys should bring swimsuits.
And I forgot.
That's bullcrap because you forgot to tell me.
I did.
Because I'd be in the hot tub right now.
I mean, like, you could go in and, like, I could give you a shirt or something.
I have my birthday suit. Does that count?
Oh, please, no. I don't need to be around that.
Again.
No.
Courtney's learned not to just come in my room. She's like, why is Kanani in her room?
No, I know why she's in her room. I know why she's in her room. I don't need to, yeah. I found this doormat on Facebook where I put it on Kanani's page that just says, it says, hold on, we might not be wearing pants.
I saw
family.
You post that and that's
my family.
Oh yeah.
Give us a minute.
Yeah, you're like, just a second, we're probably in our underwear.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We're an underwear people.
I love the shit you post to her page.
Oh, I know.
It's so good. It's so good.
I don't hardly post anything about myself anymore. One, you know, my magic practice has taught me don't tempt the evil eye. And so I don't post a lot of stuff like, oh, my life is so great. Because my life is great. But I also have my own challenges. And I also don't want to post about my problems. One, because I don't want those problems to intensify either because I'm focused on them or because
or
other
a bunch
people.
Of people are, yeah.
But the truth is, I don't want anybody's opinions about what I'm doing.
Right.
I don't really want to hear it. Like, And also, we've kind of gotten this phase in social media where people want you to dissect your feelings and tell them. Like, do you remember when I posted something about how it's not okay for someone to, in front of an author, look at the price tag, take a picture of it, and say, I'm going to order it from Amazon, and then walk away? And you're like, you're not going to buy it from me? And they're like, oh, well, it's $3 less on Amazon. And then,
yeah.
And we all know that we all do that. And I'm not criticizing someone who doesn't has a money.
But you could do that. Like,
quietly. Like, I'm adding it to my wish list for my birthday. I know some people are not going to buy from me.
Right. And that's okay. And it's like, when you need to be money conscious, I totally get it.
Absolutely.
But you could just say like, oh, I'm adding it to my wish list. Or,
yeah, but if I can't
purchase right now, but I just want to remember it for later.
If an author has a book out, royalties are pretty slim compared to the cover price. Also, they put money into that research. And if it's at a fair, they paid for a booth to be there. So they've also are thinking about money. So it bugged me because I posted that and somebody got on there and wanted me to explain to them why that was a problem. And I'm what? I don't want...
I think I went off on that.
Yeah, you did. You're like, seriously? I was... And they're like, also, could it have been this? Could it have been
also,
that?
Also, you're like, why can't, is that you just, be like... Hey, I'm sorry that you had a crappy experience. Like,
no.
Also, it's like, it's always people that you don't know that well. Like, if one of my friends was like, let's try and like deconstruct this, I might be interested in like doing that with them. But like some rando on the internet, I'm like, you know what?
And they think you're criticizing them. Like, remember that thing about a year ago when the women were taking a black box and covering their face saying like, in making it their profile shot. Do you remember that? Saying, oh, this is what a world would be like without women.
Yeah.
And people kept sending that to me and trying to get me involved. And finally I posted just to basically get them to stop saying, I'm not doing this because there's enough men in this world who don't want to see women, femmes, and non-binary people. So I'm blocking. I'm not doing that. And somebody posted, don't shame those of us who do. And I said,
I
said nothing about you. I said me. So I'm like, I'm not posting my opinions anymore because I don't want to hear what people think about them.
Yeah.
You know, so.
100%. I know. Yeah, we just post inappropriate memes.
I know.
Yeah, funny things and like.
Pictures of the dog.
Discussions or links to relevant issues is like basically all I share.
Yeah. Like, stories about my animals.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. And post and sharing updates about my book and sharing my writing and things like that. Like,
yeah.
If you want to hear my opinions on things, especially politics, you can read my blogs. And most people don't go that far. So the people that are actually, then I'm willing to engage in their opinions because I am. Like, put it out there.
And they invested.
But it's just like... Yeah. But I've had people hear stories about Ichabod, my dog, and they start giving me advice on training him. It's like, you do not know this whole dog's
also,
history.
Also, you're like, we work with the train... Like, you know, it's not like you're putting out there, hey, can I get advice on this thing? Like, I've never understood, like... You know, I understand saying something like, hey, this is a good resource with a link. But, like, this, like, well, you should do it like this, and you're doing it wrong like this. And it's just like, why not just say, like, hey... I had similar problems with my dog. This resource was really useful.
This would have totally made your head explode. So I'm on this Facebook group for Malamute and Husky owners. That's the mix that Ichabod is. And there was this woman who posted and was very sad. She's like, I have to rehome my two-year-old Husky because my seizures are getting worse and I can't take care of her anymore.
Oh, sad.
It was so sad. And she said, can anybody help me pass this along? She's a great dog and all that stuff. And this woman wrote, have you tried CBD oil? It helps with seizures. And I was like... Lady,
oh my gosh.
Don't give this one medical advice.
You're not a
doctor. She's working with a doctor and she didn't come asking for that. She came because she's heartbroken and having to give up her beloved pet. Don't take up her time.
Yeah.
Also,
talk to her about her medical issue.
And I mean, I get it. Like if someone says, has anyone tried any alternate therapies? And you want to say, oh yeah,
this
I tried this.
Me.
This worked really well. But like, I mean, it's this. It's the same thing. I went off on someone the other day because they were like, someone was posting about dealing with depression and the person was like, well, you maybe just need to get outside more. Do you spend more? And I'm just like, go fuck yourself. Listen, this is a person who is having a med. And I'm not saying that like exercise doesn't help. I'm not saying that that's not like valid to say like, oh, I found that upping my exercise helped my depression. But like, it's dangerous to, it's also shaming to say like, you're going the wrong route by working with
a doctor.
You're
clearly not. And also, are you assuming this person doesn't exercise?
Yeah, you're making an assumption.
I have depression and I exercise 5 days a week.
Yeah.
You know,
you're making an assumption.
It helps, but mine's mostly hormonal.
And it's always, it's always people that don't, like, don't really know the person. And I'm like, you know what? People don't like unsolicited advice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, 100%.
No unsolicited advice, no unsolicited dick pics. Like, that should be the rule of the universe.
Yes. Universal no truth.
Unsolicited advice.
Here.
And no unsolicited dick pics. Like, everything else, like, you know.
All would be right in the universe.
So much would be better if we could just learn those
two
rules. I love
that. That's a new meme. Yeah. That's a new meme. Two rules for the internet. No unsolicited.
100%. Oh, my God.
But, yes, so most of my Facebook Fridays is shit I post on Kanani's page. Yeah. And stories about my dog or my cats.
Yep. Yeah, right.
And every once in a while, something inspirational about dogs or cats I post on Hillary's page.
I know, right? Exactly. Before we go down on another tangent, I want to focus this back because we are about to talk to Benabel Wen, who we're very excited to talk to. And so we're going to dial her in right now. Benabel is the author of Holistic Tarot, An Integrative Approach to Using Tarot for Personal Growth, and also The Tao of Craft, Food Talismans, and Casting Sigils in the Eastern Esoteric Traditions. She also created the Spirit Keepers Tarot Deck. You can learn more about her work at BenabelWen.com. We're super excited to have you on, Benabel. How's your day going?
It's going well. Thank you for having me.
So I've started to dig through your book, which is incredible. I mean, I've been really impressed with what a huge resource it is. I am actually newer to tarot. I mean, I've dabbled with tarot on myself or dabbled a little bit. Tarot is definitely Courtney's forte. So it was actually really huge for me to start digging into the literature because
actually,
you said
huge, but what she meant was, Courtney, you're being really mean to make me do this when I don't know anything about it. And I said it's a learning experience. And then she told me to fuck myself. So.
And then I was like, God damn it, Courtney. But I thought it's been really interesting and really kind of eye opening to see the different approaches and see how in depth this is. Like, for instance, I had no idea there were so many spreads you could use. I was like,
yes.
What? Like, I knew like three or four. Like, I had no clue. So it's been really, really enlightening for me. So to kick it off, we always ask everyone that comes on the show, when did you realize you were a witch and how, or how, when and how did magic come into your life?
Oh, so I always think of that question as like asking, how did you know you were Asian? You know, I think it's, you know, you're born with certain immutable features. And then as you grow up, society tells you that the sum of those immutable features means you're Asian. So then at some point you're like, oh, okay, that's fine. I'm Asian. So it's not that I think witches are born in the hereditary sense, but I think anyone who does dedicate a lifetime to this path, they kind of know pretty early on that they're a little bit off. I mean that in the most loving and wonderful way, right? But, you know you're a little bit off. And then slowly you realize that the ways you identify and the ways you see the world and nature align with people from all over the globe that are, you know, witches within their communities. And then that's when you realize that that's what you are. So I think that's where I come from. You know, I think it's something that I realize society has certain characteristics and traits, and then they call those people witches. It's like, oh, I identify more with them than any other group of people.
And did you feel that early on, or was that something that you developed more into your adulthood?
Pretty early on without knowing what it was. You know what I mean? I think I honestly feel like we're all that way. You know, you have a bizarre attunement to nature. You kind of sense that there's a spirit or a personality to things that are otherwise supposed to be inanimate, right? You're gravitated towards stones. I mean, I just think that there's something natural. You sort of intuitively whisper incantations. You intuitively feel like all of these things can be a form of divination. And then as you grow up, you realize there are actually complex modalities of divination that was what your intuition was when you were 5 years old. So that's where I come from.
That's fantastic. And on that journey, was there people or resources that you found that were kind of helped you realize that you were this word that you had heard out there?
My mom doesn't identify as anything specific, but she is a feng shui master, so she gets consulted. Like, she does consultations for people on feng shui. She does something called dream work, where it's her belief system that when she goes to sleep or when she's in a deep form of meditation, she can descend into a form of underworld. And in this form of underworld, you can have contact with certain types of spirits, certain types of, you know, people who are dead, but it has to be of a lower vibrational nature of death. And that was the work that she did, and that's the work my grandparents did. And so I was raised in that culture. But I also rejected it pretty aggressively when I was young, because I was born and raised here in the United States. And that's very dissonant to sort of the more atheistic, scientific, rational-based culture I was being raised in. So I did reject it for a very long period of my time as well.
Oh, wow. And that's, so can you, I'm curious about when she said the lower vibration kind of death, can you specify more what that means?
So it's when you die suddenly by, when you didn't expect to die and you die, or it's an accident or a murder or a suicide. What else are there? There are other things I can't think of right away. Or a lot of bad karma. So if you were a very, very bad person, and because of that weight of, I mean, I guess we'll just use the word sins for, you know, to be loosey-goosey with terms, you know, just, right. sins, or if you've really done a lot, if you've committed a lot of atrocious acts against people and harmed a lot of sentient life, then they believe that after you die, something weighs you down, because it's your soul is being, it's being pulled down to a lower place. And so if you resist that, there's that weird sort of, threshold that you can be in. And she has, her specialty is to go to that place, to meet them there and figure out if there's something she can do to, you know, they believe you can pray to certain gods and like Buddhas, right?
Yes.
For example, Guanyin Pusa, or certain bodhisattvas that try to bring mercy to souls. So they believe that certain people have a stronger connection to those divinities and can ask those divinities for help to help these types of souls. So that's always been the work that I've watched her do.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I have like chills. I'm like,
no, it's
like just, every hair on my arms is standing up. That's so powerful.
It's really beautiful. So I was watching one of your recent YouTube videos where you were talking a lot about tarot journaling, and you said that people have asked you, how did you write holistic tarot? Because this thing is a tome.
Yeah,
right?
It is incredible.
If you haven't seen it, it is a freaking tome.
Courtney was like, yeah, the book's on the way. And I get, I was like, did we order 10 books? What? And I opened it and I was like, oh my gosh. And I was blown away by how much really amazing information. I mean, I was just like, wow, this must have taken you so long to put together.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that you said in one of your YouTube videos, was that this was, you know, this was kind of a culmination of your entire life and practice in the tarot.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just, I think everybody's tarot books is that way too, but it's more like how you approach it, right? So some people, they have a more intuitive approach, or, they're not as insane about taking notes and writing down research and citations as I was growing up. And so because I had, you know, these copious volumes of journals with research and citations, I was like, hey, I think I can write a book. And so I did.
Oh, and I've seen you in workshops at conferences and things, and you are a diligent note taker. Like everybody else is kind of the slot. I mean, I always end up, whenever I go to a tarot conference, no matter what table I'm at, it turns into the bad girls table.
That's not surprising.
It's not. I mean, I
know you.
And I was just like, why do I always end up at the bad girls table?
Because you are the bad girl.
I'm so
the
bad.
The original bad girl.
I start like, you know, I start giggling, or I start getting really mad because the tarot called me out on something, and I'm throwing a private tantrum in the back. And then I look over, and three tables away, there's Benabelle just like writing another whole like holistic tarot part two. She's taking all these notes, and I'm just like, damn, I need some focus. I need to stop being the bad girl and actually be, you know, the star student like Benabelle Wen.
I love it.
I think the perfect person would be somewhere in between. So if we could just, you know, mash our two personalities together.
Let's just start. We should sit next to each other in classes going forward. And I'm gonna act like you, and you act like me. And then there will be a third entity will emerge from us and take over the world.
I totally think so.
Yeah, I'm in.
So tell us a little bit. So our podcast is geared towards newer witches, people that are trying to find resources, which I think your book is an amazing resource, of course. What is like a number one tip that you would give someone that's interested in tarot? Where to begin? You know, there's a lot of information out there. I mean, I know I've certainly found that in trying to find out more about tarot and learn more about tarot. Is there something that you feel is like a really good key point for someone that wants to journey into learning about tarot?
context matters a lot. So we're talking about 2019 and what we have access to today, right? So that's social media, that's online, that's like an enormous amount of books, both traditionally published, self-published, an enormous amount of different types of decks, right? So given that context, I think it's more important than ever to know yourself, meaning you have to know the pedagogical approach that works for you. Some people are going to be kind of like me. You need to have structure and rules and regulations, and this is how you do this, this is how you do that, memorize this, and that's how you learn. And from there, you circle into the intuitive side of it, right? Other people, that's going to basically block them from ever really learning the tarot. So then don't take that approach. You're going to have to take a more intuitive, visual-based, maybe audio-based approach to learning the tarot. Maybe you're going to be somebody who wants to use a deck that's more story-based, where it tells narratives within each picture card, and then that's going to be better for you. Other people really want to start with the Tarot de Marseille. So I think you have to know yourself and know what's going to work for you and what your objective is. Why are you learning the tarot? Is it part of your spiritual practice? Is it to better understand yourself from a psychological standpoint, or is it for a form of magic? And I think that's going to determine who you learn from, like which book you pick up as well, right? So there's no one way to learn the tarot. I think it really depends on who you are as a person first.
That makes total sense. I mean, I think that, I think that's true about so many different magical practices. I think that, you know, you can, there are people that really crave that almost like textbook literature that's going to break it down in a really in a technical way for them. And then there are people that are drawn towards someone that's going to say, trust your instincts. And I think everyone does a balance of both, but the initial approach is really dependent on, yeah, the person. Like, some people are going to be overwhelmed by too much detail, and some people are going to not love the wishy-washy of just saying trust your instinct, you know?
Right. And also, I think one thing people, especially new tarot people, don't realize is that tarot is an evolving art form. Tarot cards as an occult practice has really only been like this fortune-telling thing like the last 100 to 200 years or so.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and so the centuries before that, it was a parlor game. It was trick-telling. Now, yes, yeah, sometimes people might have used it for fortune telling and stuff like that. But the truth is that tarot cards were actually very expensive and hard to come by until, you know, maybe like the 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even during that cusp, the late 1800s, early 1900s, when you start having these sort of, I like to call them, you know, the old white people.
Yes.
When they start writing these esoteric explanations of what the tarot is. Oh, this is the Kabbalah. This came from Greece. This came from Egypt. When they were starting to try to rationalize it as something deeper, as, you know, hitting upon a universal religion, the Prisca Theologia, they were trying to extract it out of the folk magic, folk fortune-telling tradition as well. And you see a lot of that sort of condescending tone in their literature, right? About sort of the more fortune-telling approach to the tarot. And so I think because they were coming up during the Enlightenment era, there's a lot of that influence as well, where they're trying to rationalize the tarot, but through like a mystical, esoteric or occult path. So that was something as well. And yeah, there's so many different approaches to the tarot.
And so I think that's one thing I tell people. I'm going to pause for a second. That's a really good point that you're bringing up, Annabelle. And that's one of the things that I often tell people, is that you have freedom to approach this in a personal way, because, and you're not breaking 700 years of secret mystery tradition. I get really mad when I hear people say that kind of stuff, because it's totally gatekeeping. It's also inaccurate. And so your approach, whatever it is contributing to the evolution of tarot as this spiritual, quasi-religious tool that people use. Right. One of the things that I, when I was living in New York City and I had some coworkers, I was working at a university and people were really interested because I was making a tarot deck. Some of them were super rational because I work with scientists and they literally want to know, how does that work and what are you expecting to happen? You know, approaching it like a scientist. And then I had some people who were very Christian and were very nervous about it. And then I had some people who were more Reformed Jewish who were like, oh, that's cute. But, you know, there's nothing really behind that. Right. Like, just kind of a very practical approach. And one thing I said was, look, I'm on the subway every day and I see people reading the Bible, the Quran, and the Torah as part of their daily practice. And I said, for me, that's pulling a tarot card. It's a way of centering yourself and orienting yourself for the day. And it's just one more tool. But I tell people, you're not undoing hundreds of years of tradition by bringing your own approach to it. You are helping create this path to move as you go along.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like the Bible, Torah, Quran, you know, you have sort of the more conservative approach to interpreting it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's the rigid structure, orthodox, you have to follow the, you know, years of tradition that has been set up as precedent before you. Then you have a more progressive approach where people are taking account, you know, the evolution of society and how we evolve as people as well. So you do almost need both. I think tarot, the body of tarot work necessarily requires both. You need to have the people who act like gatekeepers, who try to be the conservators, but they cannot exist alone. They have to coexist with those who are more progressive and pushing the envelope and the boundaries of what the tarot can do. I think both are necessary in this line of work.
I also noticed on your website, I went through your blog and was looking at your blog, and you do a great job describing, you know, helping people to understand the tarot cards, which I think for a lot of people would be, you know, amazing, because you really do a great job breaking down the cards and the suits and what they mean and all that stuff.
Yeah, I found that really useful in the book. I mean, like, a lot of times you get a deck or you get a book that helps you along and there's just like a couple sentences, right? But it doesn't really help you understand like how that could be. It's like, oh, this means this one sentence thing, rather than giving you an idea of how in different scenarios it could be interpreted differently, what, you know, in combination with different things, with different spreads. I mean, I found it really, each card had so much information. I went away going like, oh my gosh, like I've never seen that much info on each individual card. And that was really useful, because I think that's something that's been hard for me. It's like, well, I mean, I kind of know what this card means, but, and it's that balance of wanting to, like, you want to trust your intuition, but if you don't even know, the basic knowledge of what that is, the foundation of what that is, it's hard to even get your intuition to come in on that or understand what your intuition is saying in regards to that. So I loved too that there was lots of diagrams and pictures of spreads. So again, it's like you're able to see, I'm a very visual person. So it's like, for me, it's like, I need a combo of like reading information and gaining knowledge, but also being able to see it. Because if someone says, okay, so you put this card here and it's like this, I'm like, okay, so that's, I have to put it. I mean, I don't orient well with auditory learning. I'm very visual or kinesthetic. So I found that all those diagrams were really useful. I thought they were really helpful.
Yeah. So my other question is, how do you, Benabel, personally use the tarot in your magical practice as much as you're willing to share?
I guess it really depends on first how you define or approach the concept of magic and what's spirituality to you. What does spirituality mean? Because I think there can be bright line boundaries between, oh, this is the mundane versus this is spirituality. Or you can say, I mean, like, I believe that on some fundamental level, you know, even when Becky is asking, will Bob, you know, hook up with her, and she wants a tarot reading about on some level is also spiritual, right? And so it depends on how you first define those terms. But for me, it really is my entire outlook on life. I see the tarot as sort of a compendium, like a micro piece of the universe, where, for example, you know how in acupuncture or feng shui or astrology, the concept is like certain points on this limited space or this limited platform, whether it's an astrological wheel, it's the chart of a home, or it's the palm of your hand or your foot, every single point on that limited space represents something much bigger, the macro, right? So I believe that the tarot, for some reason, we have been able to use it to tap into all of that is the universe and all of space-time. And so we can call that the Akasha, or it's like an effigy of the Akashic records in a sense. And so it's also an effigy of divinity. And so because I see the tarot itself as an effigy of divinity, every time I use the tarot on some level, and it varies depending on light or deep, right? But on some level, I'm accessing divinity. So in that sense, it's every time I do a tarot reading, it's part of my spiritual practice.
Mm, I 100% agree with that. The thought process of every time you use it, you're tapping into divinity. And yeah. And in doing so, it is a spiritual practice. Doesn't matter the question. Doesn't matter if what you're asking necessarily had some sort of spiritual intent. What you're doing, in essence, because you're tapping into divinity, is spiritual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
what drew you to tarot originally? So you had this kind of upbringing where you felt drawn towards magic, or you didn't really know what to call it at the time, but at the beginning, when did tarot become a part of that practice?
So when I try to psychoanalyze myself, I think what it is was I was really interested in understanding that aspect beyond the veil, right? And I was born with a set of vocabulary based in Eastern traditions, but I was repudiating that, and I didn't want to use that vocabulary. But I was still interested in what was on the other side. So I had to go find another set of vocabulary to explore what was over on the other side, right? And that's, I think, how I found Western occultism. And I think it's hard to dabble in Western occultism and not stumble across the tarot. And because the tarot, you know, it like sort of feeds into the people who are really analytical, but it also feeds into the people who are really into art and the visual aspect of it. So because of, I think it's just the platform that the tarot is, it just really spoke to me from a very young age.
Tarot is a gateway drug.
Yeah, it is.
100%.
I mean, how many of us?
No, I mean, like, that's what that was like some of the stuff we did when we were kids.
Yes.
Like, it was like, oh, tarot. I mean, we knew what that was, right? Yeah. And we, like, played around with that in the Ouija board. Like, that was like.
That's it. Tarot, the tarot leaves with fewer scarring, frightening circumstances than the Ouija board does.
Oh, my God.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, that was one thing Hillary and I got my first tarot reading when I was with you. We went to the Crystal Heart bookstore in downtown Beaverton and got our tarot read. Remember, I told our theater teacher, and she like howled with laughter. She goes, "You and Hillary went to a psychic," and it was just. But that's where, you know, at least for me, it was just like Ben Bell says. It's really hard to, whether it's at the beginning or the middle or the end of your journey, it's hard to get into Western magic and witchcraft exposed, without being exposed to it. And for me, that was actually literally the gateway. But I have a question for Ben and Bell as well. And so you mentioned that you resisted your background for a while. And so I'm wondering, was there a turning point, or what was the turning point when you began to embrace it?
I think what it was, so the background that I grew up in was folk, you know, and this is in the West as well, where you see, you know, in witchcraft, you see people who are more folk practitioners, and then you see other people who take it on a very scholarly level, right? There's both. And so I was raised in a very folksy tradition where my mom didn't know why this was that or what this was, and she didn't have any sense of the history or the legacy of it. She didn't study the different dynasties, right? But it was a folk practice that she learned through an oral tradition, and that sort of connected her to her village, her society, you know, and they grew up in poverty as well. So it was really localized. And I think something about that, I couldn't connect to that because I wasn't raised in that. By the time I was growing up in like a middle-class, upper-middle-class upbringing in suburban New York, whereas she was growing up hungry many nights going to bed in some tiny little, you know, shithole in the deep south of Taiwan. So growing up, we're just a very, very different background. So the way you deconstruct what you're seeing and perceiving on the other side will be different because you're looking at it through different lenses, right? Mm-hmm. And so she was giving me her lens to look at what's on the other side through her lens, but I couldn't understand it through that lens. Does that make sense? So I needed to approach it from a more analytical, research-based place. And, you know, that would be the public library. That would be a lot of the older texts in the Western mystery traditions, because I wouldn't have had access at that time to the equivalent in the Eastern mystery traditions. And then I think it was not until much older, when we have internet archives, that you really begin to have more exposure with big data to the Chinese language esoteric texts.
Wow.
I highly
encourage, I mean, not only for people to buy the book, because the amount of information they will get in it is absolutely invaluable.
It's huge.
But why they were teasing me about fangirling all over you is I am completely obsessed with your website, because it had more information than I was lost in it for hours.
Oh, thank you.
Because, I mean, every link had like a million different things that you could learn about and talk about. And by the way, I'm now fully back into feng shui. My husband's super excited because he saw me moving everything around. He's like, oh no, what's happening now? And I'm just like, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And
don't worry about it. Just look the other way.
That's why this isn't happening. That's why our marriage works, because then he goes, okay, that's good advice, and he walks away. But your website was incredible for the amount of information and the things that you can learn about, and these deep dives with facts and resources, and I was just like, I was in awe of going through there and just checking everything out. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it's so nice to be able to go to a single place and find so many resources in one go.
1,000%.
And because I think that we all know that the internet, as you said, the internet is full of so much stuff, and it's hard to know what to filter. It's hard to know what is valuable. It's hard to know like what the source, half the time you don't even know what the source is. So it's really amazing. I think it's really amazing when practitioners have a really well-developed website and really well-developed resources, because for people that are learning, it just makes that journey so much easier for them.
That was such a nice way of saying hot mess, because I know my website's kind of a hot mess.
It's not a hot mess.
I'm obsessed with your website.
We're hot messes.
It is so good.
Well, I think we felt at home. We felt at home
because we're all hot messes. So I was like, this is my home. Check it out.
I was just like, I'm going to click on this. This is pretty and shiny. Oh, I love. Oh my God, look at all this. I had so much fun perusing your website. It was incredible.
Where's the goat?
You might not be able to hear it because
she put it right next to the microphone.
Yeah, sound effects.
It's not super loud.
I think it's louder. Because she puts her thumb on the speaker.
Oh, are you covering the speaker with your thumb?
You are covering the speaker with your thumb.
No.
There you go.
All right.
No.
But yeah, no, the amount of information that you relay to and help people find is exceptional. And like I said, I checked out your blog. Your blog is full of incredible information. It's very, it's easy to read. It's easy to follow. It's easy to understand. It's very concise. I absolutely 1,000% encourage people to check you out online, to get the book.
I know. I'm like, who's taking bets on who steals this book?
I'm stealing the book.
You keep stealing
I'm
stealing the book.
So we have this problem. We'll say maybe not a problem, a little bit of a problem.
It's a problem.
So, when we reach out to people that we want to have as guests or to their publishers, we get a book sent, and they send one book, and there's three of us, and it we always have whoever's hosting have the book first. But then it's a fight between the other two. It's like, it's really funny because I'm always like, I'll just buy it and put it on my iPad.
I'm just going to take it and put it in my purse and go home.
And Nani's like, what's that out the window? And then like the book is gone.
No, she doesn't even do that. She goes, I am taking this. You can't stop me. Try.
And then you're like, I don't have the energy for this.
I honestly don't. But also, what'll happen is I'll go to her house and she will have forgotten she has the book.
It's true, and then she sees it.
And then I take it back. So yeah, it's true. That's
it's a beautiful marriage we have.
It's a good...
Jesus.
It's a circle.
I didn't say it was a healthy marriage. I said it was a beautiful marriage.
Oh, and Benabelle thought she was coming on an actual reputable podcast, but maybe she should have listened to an episode or two.
Little did she know what she was walking. She's like, wow, God. F those people.
I bet she pulled a tarot card this morning, and then like the card of Freakazoid comes out, and she's like, there was never a Freakazoid card in the tarot. And we're like, there is now.
Surprise. Let's see. What else do I want? Oh, that's right. So one of the things that I really liked in the book specifically was I liked that you talked about how to deliver negative information in a reading. So I like that you, outside of the technicality of how to, read tarot and how to break it down and what the tarot means and the structure of it, I really appreciated that you used you had sections specifically around how to work on an emotional level with a client or how to work on an emotional level with someone you're reading. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. So let's say you have someone that is, you're doing a reading on someone and maybe the information you're getting is pretty intense. You mentioned some ways in the book on how to deliver that honestly, but in a way that is not like a slap to the face. Can you talk a little bit about the emotional, maybe responsibility that you have when reading for clients?
Words are power. And if you've somehow managed to become obsessed with tarot, you're probably pretty witchy and you probably have more power to play with than you realize. And if you use that irresponsibly, you can do a lot of damage. And so I don't think people should be doing tarot readings for others until they have a strong sense of that responsibility. Mm. Because even forget magic, forget the tarot. Just think about, you know, some of the reasons you're insecure about yourself. It was always because somebody said something to you, and that person probably completely forgot they even said that to you.
Or maybe, right? Not even really meant it.
Yeah,
or
may not have realized the impact. Yet. Yeah.
Exactly. They probably were just completely being like negligent or just being a child. They don't even realize the power in those words. Now add some real esoteric, you know, substance to that and you magnify that effect like tenfold. And so I think that's what you find in the tarot. You have to be really careful with how you present information. And it's not that you sugarcoat. And in fact, I think sugarcoating is it does more harm than good, because yeah. then they're not seeing what they need to see.
Yes.
I think, you know, even when you see professionals, when you see a doctor having to deliver bad news, you know, they still also talk to you about what your options are. They don't just say you have cancer, sucks to be you, right? They present your options to you and the consequences of those options, the good, the bad. Like, and so I think understanding that there has to be a comprehensive delivery of information when you see something bad in the cards is going to help you find the path of light within those cards. And that's what I think a professional tarot reader needs to be able to do. People always ask, you know, how do you know when you're ready to go professional as a tarot reader? It's not, oh, how many years or do you know the cards? It really is ultimately at the end of the day about whether or not you can find the path of light in any reading. So no matter what the cards say in front of you, can you find the path of light for the person, for the querent? And I think one of the ways you do that is what actions can be taken, you know, and to do that, you first look at the cards. Timing is kind of important in the sense that find the point of no return, because when you can identify the point of no return in the cards, you can see how far away or how close to that point the querent is. And if there's still a clear path before the point of no return, you have to present a lot of things that the querent can do immediately to sort of divert the path. If it's after the point of no return, just for example, you know, in terms of medical metaphors, it's if you have 2 weeks to live, then your approach as a reader changes, right? So if it's after the point of no return, then you have to be there to give space, you know, to hold space, to lower your vibration to their level so that you're, you know, vibrating at their level and they feel that support, they feel that amplification. So I think that's important. Find the point of no return. Where are they in that? And then act and then respond accordingly as a leader.
I think that's really important. I thought that that was such a strong section because, you know, I think it's easy to get so involved in the technicalities and what you're reading and forget that you're speaking to a human. Like, this is a person that has come to you probably with a question that is weighing on them pretty significantly, you know? So whether it be they want to find out something good or they're expecting to find out something bad, whatever it is, whatever it ends up being, you know, they've come because they haven't been able to figure it out on their own. And so I think that was huge. And the other thing that really struck me in the book as well was the detailing around how to establish a tarot business, what the market, like marketing tools, legal tools. And I thought that was really valuable too. I think you don't get that a lot in resources. And it's something that I think is really valuable for people that are wanting to take tarot to a professional level. I think that there's a lot of such good knowledge on and how to approach that and make sure you're doing it in a way that's legal, sustainable, and is going to be able to continue to thrive. So I thought that was really quite an interesting section as well.
Well, one of the things that we talk about a lot is how, you know, a lot of the ways that people describe witches are healers and teachers.
Yeah.
And I think that both of those exist within
and
a tarot.
Oracles.
Yeah.
And oracles.
And I think
yeah.
all of that exists within giving a tarot reading. Because as
yeah.
you said, you're telling them something. And whether you're telling them something good or not good, whatever you're telling them may have some sort of a healing component to them. Or you may need to offer some sort of empathy that they're needing in that moment. And you're teaching them something and you're showing them something. And so I think that that's something that, like you said, people don't really talk about they talk about the fundamentals of giving a tarot reading. They don't necessarily sit down and talk about the importance of how you express the reading, how you tell someone what you're seeing, how it might make them feel, and how you might need to react and prepare for that. And I think that is kind of part of the healing component of, you know, the magical practice and witchcraft.
That's super true. We wanted to give you a chance before we wrap to let us know of anything exciting coming up for you. Are there any classes you're teaching, any place you're speaking, any new books coming out? Is there anything you'd like to highlight for our listeners?
Nothing that is commercial based, but I've been working on a tarot card by card or tarot card meanings video series that I'm, you know, really obsessed with at this time. It's awesome. On YouTube, where I go through, you know, each card as they are interpreted through the Marseille, the Rider-Waite-Smith, the Thoth, and then of course my own deck, Spirit Keepers Tarot. And so that's something on YouTube. It's totally free right now. And I'm working on a couple of other books. I don't know which one will get to the finish line first, whether it's an astrology book or, you know, feng shui, but I'm always writing something.
That's amazing. Well, we will please keep us updated because we'd love to highlight that to our listeners as well. So one of the things we do every episode before we close is instead of as above, so below, we say so below, as above. No, as below, so above.
Something like that.
I don't know why. Every time we mess this up, every one of us stumbles over this. We need to have it on a plaque or something. But
your next tattoo, Kanani, you're ready for another one.
So we say as below, so above, because the little ritual we do to close is to say something that we are letting go of, and then also what we are asking them to bring in. So we'd love if you'd like to be in, join us in this ritual. We'd love to hear something that you are wanting to let go of, and then in return something that you would like to bring in.
I would like to let go of all the business aspects of having just self-published Spirit Keepers Tarot. I think that project has wrapped up. It's now out of print, so I'd like to let go of that. And I would like to invite in all the energies necessary to finally complete that novel I've been working on.
Yes!
Okay, for me, well, we've been talking about food habits, and with my new celiac diagnosis, letting go of trying to let go of control and realize that there's going to be a lot of times when the foods that are available to me are just not foods that I can have, and just saying that I will survive. God, the theme song is now in all of our heads.
Yep, pop into mine.
Yeah. Sorry. And then
way to blow it.
Yeah, and not be disgruntled about that, but also embrace healthier living, healthier habits that are better for me. That's what I'm doing.
So for me, my dog went through a major surgery, and it's been like a real challenge. She had to have her knee restructured. Yeah. And so it's been a big challenge trying to manage all of her medical needs. And she's Friday finally got the clear to start rehabilitating the leg. So I'm going to let go of all the anxiety of like managing all of her medical needs and bring in excitement to be back outdoors. Today we're going swimming. I'm excited. So bringing in outdoor excitement and fun times with the dog and letting go of all of the medical chaos.
I'm going to say that I am letting go of some of my stubbornness of not wanting to break out and try new things. Which is not easy.
You're letting go of stubbornness. I know,
not all
it.
Of stubbornness.
We lost it over
no.
Here.
I know
Hillary was being polite and trying to stifle her laugh and not me.
my stubbornness and specifically not wanting to try new things or just kind of enjoy being stuck in old habits, because I have certain habits that I would like to break away from. And so I think in some ways in my head, I think like, if I'm not still like that, then I'm not me anymore. And to kind of like allow myself to evolve a little bit and realize that those if you two start things eating kale, I will never still
eat
you.
You're going to eat kale. It's going to happen.
I'll never.
I'm going to make things with kale in it that you can't. You don't even see,
know,
and you won't even
That's
know.
So disgusting. I'll know.
No, today we were getting lunch at the grocery store, and she asked me what something was, and the truth was it was eggplant. I told her it was kale.
I was wondering. I was like, "That's disgusting." It was disgusting either way.
I love the fact that she didn't know the difference between eggplant and kale.
I had no idea. I was like, "That's the weirdest kale I've ever seen," but it's all disgusting. So.
It's purple and it's in little chunks. That's not what kale looks like.
The fact that it looks gross means
she didn't
know
what it was.
Oh boy.
What I want to bring in is some more positive habits. I want to focus on the things that I do that I really enjoy and that I think is really adding to my life. And I want to let go of the habits that I feel like are not contributing to my life in a positive way.
Nice. Sweet. That's a good one. Benabelle, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. For our listeners, we'll have all her information up on the website. So please go check it out. Pick up the books. Look at her YouTube. Go to the website. There's just such a wealth of information. And we're really excited to continue to see more and more content coming from you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. So we'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes or to ask your burning questions for us to answer.